It has become common in situations like this to give what people are calling a land acknowledgement. Well, I want to do something like that as well. But I am not going to simply acknowledge the people who originally occupied this land, my ancestors, the Ne'ita, and our cousins, the Métis. Instead, I want to acknowledge the actual land we are sitting on. All these trees, and that water over there, and this grass, and all the animals, and the birds, and everything else, and the spirits of this place are all part of a shared story that we, Indigenous and non-Indigenous people alike, are included in. The land, us, the water, the sky, we're all part of one big, beautiful story. This land we are on is where my grandfather settled after being evicted from the territory that became Prince Albert National Park. My mother was only 12 years old when the RCMP went there and told all the Indians they had to leave. When they lived here, from about 1928 to about 1956, my grandfather's garden covered this entire area where we are sitting. About 70 years ago, he moved from here to be closer to town so the kids didn't have to walk or paddle so far to go to the school. Joan and I came here about 20 years ago. It was all overgrown. We cleared the land and built our cabin and have been here ever since. It's a good place. To me, it feels like home. That dock where you tied up your boats marks the beginning of the Montreal River. Everything south of the dock is Montreal Lake. Everything north is river. It flows to L'Orange, about a three-day paddle away from here. A few hundred meters south is where the adhesion to Treaty 6 was signed in 1889. But Indigenous people have been using this land for a lot longer than that. This was a well-known place to people who paddled the lake and river. It's the perfect stopping point. We've had a couple of extreme water levels here in the last few years. Each time the lake floods, it erodes the bank a little more. After the first flood, I was walking the beach and found what looked to me to be flakes left by someone working stone. The next flood, I found a complete arrowhead. Most interestingly, I found a piece of chert, used commonly in stone tool making. The closest place to find chert is in Montana. In my mind, Indigenous people have been stopping here for 10,000 years or more. So imagine that, where you are sitting, thousands of years ago, someone sat in the same spot and flaked stone to make hunting arrows. I want to thank Rosella for introducing me. You've followed protocol. You asked to come here. You gave me a gift. That's a really nice blanket. Thank you. I think it's going to come in handy before long. Once the sun goes down, it starts to cool off. But now I'd like to introduce myself and introduce the idea of life story. I was raised here. This used to be a community of trappers and fishers. Growing up, I heard all the stories of trapping and fishing and believed I could become a trapper and fisher. My father died when I was 8 years old, and my mother, with six children to look after, took over trapping and fishing. When I was about 13, I was walking the trap line with her. It was a beautiful March day. We were walking on a frozen river. The sun was toward the southwest, so about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. The wind was warm and from that same southwest direction. The sky was clear with a few wispy clouds. I remember everything about those minutes, including the crunch of my mother's moccasins on the snow. It had melted and frozen and melted and frozen and sounded different. She stopped walking and said, "Nikosis, you have to learn this. You have to learn how to trap. You have to learn how to fish. You have to learn how to make your living off the land in case anything ever happens to that other world." I knew what she meant. I had heard her stories about the Great Depression. The conversation lasted less than a minute, but for some reason, it stuck. From then on, I made sure I could survive in both worlds.